look there. The station lights come into sight. The subway city seems alive tonight. There are slips for skippers, pads for pilots, hubs for drivers, and anchors for pirates. The trains all break, and the ships are right. The gliders land, and the balloons alight. Travelers arrive from foreign climates, and all are lit by the ultraviolets. The transmit beams cross time in waves tonight. The residents are primed and soar for sights. In courts for jesters and streets for riots. Pubs for harlots with laces and eyelets. In the midst of it all, a glass office stands. And therein sits tall the voice of the lands. Now sit back and enjoy the lucid expanse as you listen to your host, with the double-thumbed hands.
Hey! Well, that last transmission had me reeling for a while, I admit, but I cheered up a bunch thanks to my favorite time of year, Halloween. Did you know that we in the Subver City share this holiday with the Uptop? Come to think of it, since you're just passing through, you might not actually be aware of how many of us came to live here in the station and its surrounding metropolitan districts. Everyone has their own story, of course, but a lot of our citizens came to us from the upper adversity, and many of those came down just following Halloween. Halloween, for us, is a two-day holiday. It begins on October 31st when the citizens attempt to scare each other with costumes representing their previous lives. Of course, there's a party or a few, but many enjoy watching relays from the adversity where, as they say, the freaks finally come out. Up there, those that have been hiding beneath their societally required facades reveal a little of who they really are when they put on their costumes. It may be as simple as dressing a little sexier or as complicated as letting a little of the id out and reveling in a night of freedom. Come November 1st, most return to their regular existences, but some realize they can't live those old lives anymore, and they find their way down here, where teams of insecurity guards are dispatched and waiting to usher them in. November 1st in the Subver City is the beginning of Orientation Week. Remember, the station itself is manned by a ghost crew due to the transpo shore leaves, and travel between parallel realms and fictions is limited, so that leaves plenty of time for me to volunteer on the welcoming committee for the new city immigrants. It's such a blast seeing all the new faces streaming in. I myself was actually born here and have never been up top, so one of my other favorite things about Orientation Week is all the little terrestrial trinkets I can pick up from the freshmen when they discard them. I have a little bit of a collection growing. My starter piece was a tea set passed down from my grandmother, who found her way down here by following a rabbit down a hole one day. Crazy, right? Oops, I went on a tangent there. My mother says my tendency to stray in thought is a little leftover gift from my grandfather. So back to Orientation Week. As a committee member, I get assigned to a group of noobs, and I have the pleasure of telling everyone about all their new freedoms and their life options should they choose to remain in the Subver City itself. Anyone can leave, of course, but not until they've had a mandatory period of becoming the them that they truly are and learning to love themselves. And just so you know, I'm 3 years running as the reigning Queen of Warm Hugs. Okay, enough of me fluffing my ego. Today's story I picked out because it reminded me of the season, both Halloween and New Citizen Orientation. Not only does it have a zombie outbreak, but it also has a character that is hiding who he really is inside. But I can't tell it all at once. I'm just going to give you the first part today, and then just when I've got you, I'm going to cut you off and make you wait for next time. That's me doing my part to be a little evil in honor of my favorite holiday. And I do have a warning for you. Signori, tell the fine people.
How about niños, not for kids?
Yeah, this one is for adults only because there's a little hanky-panky in it. Zombie Schlager by Belweth Harbright. How long had it been, he wondered. Nearly 2 years. He had sworn to his wife he'd put his old ways behind him, but it was a crisp October night. The uprising had finally been taken care of, and he woke up from his mid-afternoon nap with the taste and smell of cock in his mouth, from a particularly enchanting dream he'd been having. He stretched, checked to make sure his wife was fast asleep, and then dressed in his Sunday best. He dabbed some hair tonic on, straightened himself out, and glanced over his reflection with a critical eye. Hard to tell in the dark, especially with the new bio bulbs they'd installed, but he was passable, even at his age. He considered shaving, but thought against it, then rubbed his chin and shot himself a double trigger in the mirror. "You old handsome son of a bitch," he grumbled throatily to himself. Ray Thomas was on the prowl. When he was younger and wilder and the world hadn't yet ended, his mother tried to instruct him on the right way to do things. She'd made him go to Sunday school regular-like, bade him do his chores, and every now and then sat down and gave him a lecture. One of hers always warranted the capital letter, he presumed, because she was always spit-firing mad when she gave one. He never knew what triggered it back then, but as he got older, he realized it was always sparked by some sort of new revelation about the ungodly heathen things everyone else in the world got up to. Every time he went out, he heard her voice in his ears, an almost ghostly whisper. "Homosexuals are the worst sort of people, young Raymond," she said. He could still see how mad she was. To this day, he wasn't sure what had triggered that one. She went on a tirade and talked about the filth and sin of what they did and the various and sundry positions they did it in. He sat and blinked and nodded his head and looked horrified when she arched her eyebrows. She always did this to emphasize a certain point. Ray was a good student and a good listener. He just wasn't much good at actually practicing what other people preached the way they wanted. When his mother had caught him one day with a neighbor doing the things she had mentioned, she'd nearly had a stroke. The chewing she gave him then set him, mostly, on the straight and narrow. He'd found a wife, had some kids. They were mostly grown and mostly alive, thank God. It was when the last one had turned 18 that he'd started thinking about what he really wanted for himself. A double life he'd led, until the uprising. He and his wife had been barricaded in their house for weeks, slowly running out of food and just waiting for the evil aberrations that swarmed outside to finally get smart enough to bust inside. He'd told her then, told her everything. Every last rest stop rendezvous, bathroom blowjob, every last man down to the last drop. They'd held each other and wept, waiting for death.
"At least I won't have to worry about catching anything," she'd said, trying to be optimistic in the face of death.
Couldn't have been more than an hour before they heard helicopters and gunshots. The red paint on the roof had done the trick. The army had swooped in, scooped up the rest of the rotten bastards, and gave the two of them some food. They each packed a bag apiece and went to the nearest major city, and finally, when they gave the all clear, he and Myra had come back to this same little house his mother had owned. Myra made him swear on the good book that he'd leave those ways behind him, and he had. Only it was just, there was something in the air this evening. It reminded him of brighter, more beautiful days when there weren't burnt-out houses on every corner, when there was a hell of a lot more people walking around. It would just be this once, he promised himself, just to get it out of his system. He thought of his mother as he neared his old drinking hole.
"Raymond Thomas," she'd said in that shrill voice, her eyebrows arching so high they nearly touched her forehead. "You mark my words, young man. The homosexual lifestyle will be the death of you."
He chuckled again to himself. If them undead brain suckers hadn't taken him, then going out and having a little fun surely wasn't going to. He parked his truck, twirled his keys on one finger, and then locked the doors and walked inside. 2 years and an apocalypse hadn't much changed the inside of the Pink Flamingo. The walls were still the same god-awful shade of pool table green, and the floors were still the same linoleum encrusted with God knows what. Of course, there had been some changes. Supplies were scarce since the uprising, and most everyone had adopted some of the newer technologies Arcaso Industries had come out with. Z-curity drones, like the big metal automaton guarding the door, were one. Biobulbs were another. They didn't need any electricity, and as far as he was aware, they never went out. True, they didn't glow nearly as brightly, but all it took to get him going again was a shot of solvent, which was cheap enough. He looked for some familiar faces and found a few. Fewer than he'd have liked, of course. It hadn't been just him locked in his house 2 autumns ago. Nearly the entirety of the continental United States had been under siege. He sidled up to the bar and squinted at the new bartender.
"I'll have a dollish," he said, his voice hopeful.
Surely the local microbrewery had been saved. The bartender nodded, keeping his eyes off the drink he was mixing. He was a far cry different than the last one. This guy looked like he played baseball and had biceps you could crush a basketball with. Ray let his eyes drift over the man's form and cleared his throat a bit.
"Where's old Steve?"
he asked.
"The uprising got him,"
the bartender said. His voice was quiet and clipped. Ray barely heard him over the clank of bottles from the back bin. When the words finally clicked, Ray felt his heart sink.
"That's depressing,"
he muttered.
The bartender shrugged and turned back around, sliding his drink towards him. Money changed hands. Ray took a sip and felt the rush of cold booze enter his system.
Lots of people died, the bartender said. It's sad, but you can't dwell on it.
Ray nodded. He'd had his share of ups and downs. Nearly every one of his neighbors were dragged out of their houses or shot themselves. For the first year or so, he assumed everyone he knew had died. It was a silly supposition, of course, but it helped to dampen the pain when they found the body or it came shambling around a corner. The bartender was clearly disinterested in pursuing conversation. Ray turned his back to him and looked at the rest of the crowd. At the far end of the bar next to the emergency exit, the security drone glowed dimly, its biobulb visor scanning the room. Of course, Ray had seen them before. He'd even considered purchasing one to keep him and the wife safe. They were just a little pricey and creepy, to say the least. It may have taken the end times to propel technology into the future, but they were here now. He assumed it doubled as a bouncer. Someone was waving at him. Lacquered nails glittered in the reflected lights.
By God, you're alive, a shrill voice said.
There was a blur and a rush of perfume. An older, portly drag queen had rushed him and squeezed him. Her ebony skin clashed with her platinum blonde wig.
Dearest Jezebel, it is so nice to see you again, Ray said with gusto.
Honey, I thought you'd been eaten, Jezebel said. How on earth did you manage?
Plywood, he said. And that oak furniture the wife insisted on came in handy.
Jezebel laughed another high, shrill laugh.
We barely managed to scrape by ourselves, she said. Me and some of the other girls were doing a benefit down at the Habana. Girl, you better believe there was chaos on those streets. Thank God we had a cast iron gate. It kept most of them out. It was a very wild couple of weeks. I could write a book on it.
You probably should. Let me buy you a drink. What are you having?
A bottle of Schlager would hit the spot, she said.
Ray turned up his nose.
You actually drink that rot?
She shrugged.
It's amazing if you mix it with coconut rum and some pineapple juice. Best part is you don't get a hangover either. You wake up in the morning feeling like $1 million.
She tittered to herself.
So what brings you out this evening?
I just felt like going out, he said.
Looking for some action, I presume?
She quirked an eyebrow up. He shrugged with one shoulder.
It's just nice to get out and see old friends that are still alive.
Sure it is, honey. So how about that drink?
They were sitting over at a table in front of the dancer's pole. Various listless men had come and gone, boys younger than Ray's youngest, too, may he rest in peace. Ray had given them all a tip and gotten warm caresses, but more than that he decided against.
Don't look now, but that big hunk of man over there has been sizing you up like a piece of meat,
Jezebel said to her drink. In the biobulb incandescence, the whites of her eyes looked red. Ray glanced over and saw him. He was so thin he was almost gaunt, with milky pale skin and black hair cut in a messy way. He was dressed in a dark-colored business suit. The contrast between skin and clothes was stark. He stood out like a phantom against the rest of the crowd. He was entirely alive, Ray was pleased to note. Not only would that hunk of junk against the wall come to life if he had detected anything that wasn't entirely human, but the Risen had never had the patience to sit still, let alone use furniture. The man noticed his gaze and stared back over the brim of his drink. Ray gulped.
What on earth could he want from an old fart like me?
He asked idly.
Can't be but half my age, if that.
Watch your wallet, sweetie,
Jezebel said. A long fingernail tapped her nose.
Looks like a hustler to me.
Ray stared into his glass. It was one thing to think about cheating on his wife again, even after he had sworn to her. But the idea and the very real thought of actually doing the deed made his blood freeze in his veins. It had been so long. He was so old now. Was he up for something like that? A million thoughts whirled in his brain, and he polished off the rest of his dollish in one go. He joked with Jezebel for a bit and tried to catch up on how the old crowd was. Mostly dead, she'd said. She was talking about the funny bits she'd heard and gleaned. Most of them had died by their own hands. Some of them had been torn into pieces, only to rise again. Depressing subject matter, but relevant, of course. One can only deny the hideousness of the world for so long before one accepts it. Survival stories were now a currency. Jezebel was halfway through a story on how old Stu had almost barbecued his dog when he heard a deep voice cough in a gentle way.
May I buy you a drink?
Ray swallowed. It was the Phantom Man. He'd materialized at Ray's side. His eyes were green, bright green like emeralds, and looked a bit bloodshot. His features were very pronounced, almost Romanesque. He'd laid one of his hands on the table to lean on, and though slim, it was delicately carved with long, tapering fingers and wiry muscle. They were the hands of an artist. Ray felt his throat close up.
Of course you may,
Jezebel said. She tittered to herself.
I'll have a shot of Schlager.
His lips, full, etched onto his face like he was made of marble, quirked into a smile.
Of course.
Again, the heated gaze on Ray's face.
And you? Just a dollish. I've got my round, he said.
The young man shook his head.
I wouldn't hear of it. I'll be back shortly.
He turned, and as he walked away, Ray's eyes devoured his form.
I think he's a ghoul,
Jezebel said, her voice scandalized. Ray turned his attention back to her.
A what? A ghoul. It's slang and a rumor at that. Supposedly, when you drink too much lager, it changes your insides.
What do you mean?
I don't know. But they say it makes your skin pale and your eyes bloodshot.
Then why do you drink it?
He asked. She shrugged.
What else is there to do but drink booze?
She asked.
The world is completely and utterly dead and gone by now, honey. The apocalypse was nigh, now it's by. And now we're here, left rooting around in an ash pile and expected to rebuild what we had from bones and old corpses. Some people might look on the bright side of things, but I'm too far gone for that, honey.
Ray nodded. He couldn't argue with her. Before he could muster up something to say, the phantom man had come back, drinks in tow. He slid the dollish to Ray and the schlager to Jezebel. The liquid inside was a neon green with a red Z on the front. Jezebel twisted the lid off with the strength of 20 men and winked at them both before she knocked it back.
That can't be good for the digestion.
The phantom man smirked at him. His eyes were the same color of the drink.
So, what's your name?
The phantom man asked.
Ray?
They shook hands. The phantom man's skin felt smooth and warm, rough and enticing. Ray felt another wave of heat flush from his head to his toes.
The name's Benji,
the man said. His green eyes looked up and down Raymond's form.
Very nice to meet you.
Ray felt his throat freeze up again. He went to reach for his drink, but knocked it over with his fingers. Beer spilled all over the table, and he scrabbled to set his drink up straight to compose himself and stop before he'd made a complete ass of himself.
Fiddlesticks,
he muttered. On the inside, he was cussing and spitting. Benji laughed. It was not a cruel laugh, but warm and generous.
What do you say we get out of here?
He asked. Jezebel's eyebrows nearly popped out over her wig.
Bye, honey,
she said to Ray. She winked at him, tapping her nose.
I...
said Ray. He trailed off. He saw it then, as if it were two open doors in front of him extending on into the universe. Two paths in either direction. On the one path, he could say, sure, strange, attractive man, let's go on an adventure. On the other path, he could say, go away, and go home to his wife. He would crawl back in bed, curl up next to her, and then sleep comfortably until the morning came. But he imagined smooth, supple skin under that suit, got a whiff of that musky smell of man, and his dick did the thinking for him.
Ooh, what do you think's gonna happen next? Do we think he'll actually go through with it? Well, let's weigh the pros and cons for Ray. Pro, hot young gay non-undead mystery man. Con, snuggly loving wife waiting at home. Pro, getting out of the doldrums of daily life in a safe zone. Con, going home with a potential ghoul. Pro, being true to your human emotions and desires. Con, do we actually know for sure that Benji is still a human? Pro, drinks are on Benji. Con, the drinks are probably made of the questionable ingredients that are still available in post-zombie uprising world. Well, I guess you're going to have to tune in next time to find out. That was my attempt at evil laughter.
This episode's story, Zombie Schlager, Part 1, was written by Bell with Harbright. Harbright is a horror, sci-fi, fantastic fiction author and poet whose home dimension seems to be centered around Tulsa, Oklahoma. He is married to a wonderful husband, owns two cats that think they should be worshipped, and has plenty more projects on the back burner. For more information on his latest projects, you can check him out on Twitter at Bell Harbright. That's BellHarbright. Or on his author page on Facebook at facebook.com/BellHarbright. The voice of Am Onimus is Aaron B. Lillis. Other featured voices in this episode include Jose Perez, Matt Marv, The Dear Maddie Show, and our intro is read by voice actor Guy from Fiverr.com. To contact us or submit stories, please visit our website at SubverCityTransmit.com. This episode was written by Aaron B. Lillis. SubverCity Transmit is a Crockett and Graven production.